Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
The European Union elections, surprising to the headlines in Europe, the rise of what are called far-right parties. That's a European use of those terms. Far-right parties doing well from individual countries in the 27-member European Union. There are 720 seats in the European Union Parliament that meets in Brussels, mostly, sometimes in Strasbourg. Majority rules. However, there are now about 400 seats held by the center, which calls itself center-right or liberal or socialist. That's the establishment. The rise of the far right is not anywhere close at this point to majority, but it's significant. And that means that it did well in the European Union. So it's rising in individual countries such as Alternative for Deutschland in Germany or the National Rally in France or Vox in Spain or the Brothers in Italy. There are others in the Netherlands and Denmark and Finland and Sweden. Everybody's got a so-called far-right party doing very well. There's no one version of a far-right party, but all of them are acquainted with the term nationalism. I welcome Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, writing most recently about how to regard these Syria elections. We have the European Union elections. We have the pending UK elections on July 4th. Now we have called a snap election by the president of France for the Sunday the 30th for the first round, Sunday the 7th for the second round for the parliament. And then there's the U.S. election that is in the backdrop of all of this. Why all these elections and why the surprise of what appears to be rejection of the status quo ante by unnamed? Gregory, a very good evening to you. You have written of urbanization. You have written, which is a version of globalization, these elections in the European Union. There's genuine surprise at how well the far-right parties did because they're not the establishment, because they're not calming the nerves of the European markets. Well, how do you see these far-right parties in their future? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, I think we have to be very careful about the use of the term far-right parties. And I think that's an expression which has been engendered in the popular media, which has become part of the new establishment. And this new establishment started to take root in the mid-Cold War and has continued to consolidate as a party which sees growing wealth, the growing unimportance or lowered importance of the nation state and the like. And it's basically been continuing to build some momentum. It's basically a status quo party in the sense that it's, you know, we're rich and we're going to stay rich. The reality is that all these cycles are, in fact, cycles, and they come to an end. And the end of, if you like, growth and wealth and so on has been evident for some time. And we saw that this globalist view, which was largely proposed by the urban populations, and the urban populations, as we know, are now the majority in the world. So we saw that taking great strength in the 1990s and so on. And then what we saw in about 2016 was a final rejection of that by voters in many parts of the world. We saw it in continental Europe. We saw it in Britain. Brexit was an absolute phenomenon of the rejection of globalism and a call for a revival of nationalism, not nationalism in a jingoistic sense, but in the sense of we want control of our own society, we want to have our own customs perpetuated, and so on. And we saw, as a result, Brexit was carried through the referendum of 2016. We saw Donald Trump come out as the spokesman, if you like, of the American population element, which rejected this urban-dominated, history-less society. And all of this momentum, which was taking place around the world, suddenly was interrupted in 2020 by the pandemic, which was greatly exaggerated in order to make it a weapon of political control. And that essentially brought nationalism and the great nationalist globalist debate under control. Now that the pandemic is over and we're back to business as usual politics, we see that there's been no cessation of the rejection by the so-called nationalists of the so-called globalists. So what we're seeing now is this massive resurgence, if you like, of the nationalist movement moving against the globalists, moving against these transnational pan-national governments like the European Union. As a result, the rising conservative vote to restore national identity in continental Europe has become very pronounced. I think what we saw with this European Union election was certainly not the rise of the far right, but the rise of the moderate nationalist who just say, look, all we want is our country back. And they're not even necessarily rejecting the need for international cooperation. And where this ties in with the British election, which Rishi Sunak could well lose on July the 4th, is not because the globalists are once again taking control in Whitehall, but quite the reverse. What we're seeing is the British public is angry at the London politicians, which the Conservative Party has reverted to being. They're this anger at them for abandoning what they promised to deliver with Brexit. So essentially, the British public voted for Brexit. They eventually, after much cajoling and a strong Conservative majority to deliver it, got Brexit. And then the Conservative government under Rishi Sunak basically stepped back from guarding the borders, from stopping the massive multi-million population flow of illegal immigrants and the like. So essentially, voting against the Conservatives in this particular vote is not a vote against nationalism or the Conservative or moderate right perspective. It's a vote which basically said the government did not do what the public wanted. And I think we're seeing the same thing happening with the Netherlands election recently, which has basically been very strong in defending the national identity. We're seeing that throughout other countries in Europe, including Sweden and Italy. And, of course, we've seen it stay strong in Hungary and the like. And we're going to see it again in Europe. We're seeing it, this antagonism towards these urban-based governments in Australia as well, for example. So there's this whole movement which is getting back to reviving, if you like, the defense of the nation state against the internationalists who say the nation state no longer matters. Here's the thing: the nationalists have basically said, we know what works. It's a nation or a nation state which can identify and control its own geography and its own means of survival. The globalists have not said how they can deliver that kind of security and prosperity for the world. The essential growth of global wealth has been on the backs of nation states, not on the backs of globalism itself. So globalists who keep saying, well, we can just buy milk from China and rice from Burkina Faso, whatever we like, it doesn't matter where it comes from. The reality is the nationalists say, no, it matters where it comes from, because if we can't control what we grow and how we deliver that grain or food to market, then we are not in control of our own destiny. So it's almost a battle, once again, between the pragmatists and the utopianists. And that's taking place at the ballot box in 2024 with a particular vengeance.
I look at France as a very clear example of what you just illustrated. Marine Le Pen is in charge of, it's called the National Rally. It's strongest in the agricultural parts of France, the south of France. All the farmers uniformly support Marine Le Pen. Other farmers across the European Union, although they're a small part of the, a not large part of the GDP, they're a very large part of the voice against the governments. Marine Le Pen represents people who produce food, who don't want to be replaced by food from Brazil or food from Uruguay. It appears that Macron has now called this snap election because he's aware that Marine Le Pen represents a rising faction that could very well take the assembly. What does Macron represent? Because he's been in the news for the last several months by calling for troops to intervene in Ukraine. I wonder, did he get lost in being the president of France and begin to believe that he was the president of the European Union or some globalized utopian idea?
I wouldn't say it's as utopian as that. I think that Macron saw the absolute implosion of not only the German economy, but the German political leadership of Europe. And he recognizes that for Europe to remain stable, it has to have a strong leader, particularly at this time, to galvanize it. He has acted in some ways as a great protector of the European Union, and in other ways, he's backtracked on that to protect France. He's aware that the French population is paying too much for food, and this is a result largely of this artificial market, which has been created in order to give a chance to farmers in other European countries as well as foreign trading partners. So he's proposed, in fact, closing French borders to imported other food from other European states in order to steal some of the vote back from Marine Le Pen. There's no question that if there was a presidential election held today, Marine Le Pen would take the presidency from Macron. On the other hand, she will almost certainly either take the control of Parliament at these June 30th and July 7th elections. But if it had been delayed much longer, if Macron had delayed holding parliamentary elections much longer, Le Pen's vote would have been so overwhelming as to be embarrassing. There have been suggestions that Macron might resign even now. I don't believe that's the case. I think he's still got a mandate to continue through until the next presidential elections in a year or two. So he will continue there, but it's going to be a difficult role with a parliament which is going to be strongly opposed to him. He'll have to find ways in which to compromise on legislation. As for his attempt to revive support for Ukraine, I think that's partly, as I said, in the view of the perspective that he has to show a united European strength in the international community. And it may also have to do with the fact that both Russia and Ukraine, to a degree, ignored him, and Russia particularly, perhaps, in that France had a treaty role with both Russia and Ukraine called the Normandy Accords, under which France was entitled to arbitrate, or was designated to arbitrate, disputes, strategic disputes between Ukraine and Russia. And both Ukraine and Russia, but particularly Russia, ignored that. So I think this is a bit of Macron trying to get back into the argument there. He's not getting much traction around the European Union for putting European boots on the ground in Ukraine. He was supported a little by U.S. President Biden, who allowed the Ukrainians to use highly dangerous offensive weapons by Ukraine against targets inside Russia, which risks escalation of the conflict. And of course, he has been supported in some degree by the fact that the British have continued to fund the Ukraine war. But I think that's separate from this domestic issue. Right. Macron is losing ground to Le Pen.
Let's just a moment. The UK is too tempting, especially Nigel Farage. When we come back, Gregory Copley, Defense and Foreign Affairs. We're talking about the the democracy demonstrating a trend away from the urban centers. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bachelor.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.